Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, October 9th, 2014. And with me today, I have the always sharp and on task, Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I am on task.
And I totally put you on the spot there because now apparently you have to be on task today. Good luck with that.
Is my task to do the podcast, or should I be doing that other thing while you guys are doing the podcast? There's that sharp part, right?
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's just see what happens. It'll be an adventure.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. And also the equally, I don't have
I'm not on task, dude. Let's just.
Yeah, I was going to say on task, and then my friend in ketchup. My friend in ketchup.
Yeah, there we go. I'll be your cranky cup of ketchup.
That's awesome. And if you're totally lost in what that means, I'll put a link to yesterday's Apple Context Machine in the show notes so you can find out.
Excellent.
Yeah. Also, today's sponsor, Smile and Text Expander Touch 3.
Woohoo!
That's right.
Nice.
All right. The first thing that I wanted to dive into today, on first blush for me, didn't seem like it was going to be that big of a thing. But once we started talking in our morning meeting, it's like, oh, yeah, we probably really need to have a serious talk about this. And this is the whole thing with Apple now enforcing app-specific passwords for third-party applications that are accessing iCloud content if you have two-factor authentication enabled for your iCloud account, which is a big mouthful. So the kind of condensed version is, if you have previously enabled the two-part authentication thing for iCloud, so like if you try and change your password, then you get the text message on your phone, here's the code so that you can verify it's really you doing it. Apple has another piece that goes along with that whole thing, and this is requiring you to have a specific and unique password for each third-party application that accesses your content that's stored on iCloud. So this would be like a third-party calendar application or a third-party email application that accesses your iCloud email address, things like that. But there's more to it than that, it turns out. And Dave, that's where you came in really handy because you're able to offer up more details about exactly when and where these new passwords come into play.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, right? Because this has been a staged rollout. You were able to create and use these passwords previously, but it was not mandated, which means that you could have gone and created a password for, say, the Mac app BusyCal to access your iCloud calendar, but you didn't actually have to use it. You could still be using your main iCloud password, and that would work totally fine. That today, in theory, changes. I'm not sure what time today that changes. I rolled my BusyCal over from my main iCloud password to an app-specific password about an hour and a half ago, so 11 a.m. Eastern time on the 9th, and I did it out of choice, not out of force, but knowing that probably later today that would be a good thing to have done. And then I proceeded to think about all the other apps that access all the other third-party apps that access my calendar. And I thought, ooh, I don't use Fantastical on my Mac, but I do use Fantastical on my iPhone. So I better go create a password for that. So I went and created a password for that. I did it from my iPhone. I copied it to my clipboard. And you create it by going to appleid.apple.com. Created the password, copied it to my clipboard, got very smart, launched up Fantastical, started digging about in the settings, and realized there's no place here to put my password or my username for that matter. And the reason is Fantastical on iOS reads your iOS calendars. It asks you for permission the first time you launch it, and that's the end of that. So you don't need to create a password for Fantastical because it doesn't use one. It just uses the calendar store that's already on your phone. And the same is true of apps like Busy To-Do, which does the same thing.
Same is going to be true for a lot of apps, right? Because those
have been... On your iPhone, correct, yeah.
But not your Mac.
I mean, those folks have been there for a long time, right?
For a long time.
That's where we started. So that should still be the norm.
It should be the norm, but mail apps won't get that, right? Mm. If you use a third-party mail app on your iPhone and right. you connect to iCloud, right? Now, you may use iCloud for a lot of things and not mail, and then this doesn't apply to you, right? It's only, you know, for those services that you use. Now, in theory, in the long run, what will happen is like what's happened with Google, where apps have a choice. They can stick with the old login methods and therefore require this second password. But this really is a workaround offered by Google and now Apple. These app-specific passwords are a workaround to what in theory should be done. For example, BusyCal on the Mac now for Google calendars, it uses two-factor authentication the way it's supposed to be done. It actually creates an OAuth session when you want to log into your Google Calendar. It brings up a little window that's actually a web page, and you log in there, and then you get your two-factor ask and answer question or whatever that is. You know, I had to use the Authenticator app on my iPhone to generate a key that I then also typed in after entering my username and password. Hence, two factors, right? My username and password, that's one factor, and then this Authenticator thing was the second one. And then the app doesn't store my password at that point. It just stores this key that I've authenticated that lets it get through. In theory, the same will be possible with Apple's two-factor authentication. But in the meantime, we've got this workaround.
Yeah, and so what it comes down to is if you're using a program on your Mac today, and all of a sudden you get this dialogue that pops up, and it says that you don't have a valid password for accessing whatever it is through iCloud, then you have probably enabled two-factor authentication. And you'll now have to go to the Apple website and create an app-specific password for that application so it can continue to access what it needs to get at.
That's right. Yeah, previously, two-factor authentication only protected your financial data and purchases. Now it, in theory, protects everything.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, before we hit our next topic, I want to talk about our sponsor, Text Expander Touch 3 from Smile. So that's smilesoftware.com.
Yay.
And yeah, and if you're not familiar with Text Expander or Text Expander Touch, it's a really cool application that lets you create little abbreviations called snippets. And when you type them, they expand out into whatever it is that you really wanted them to say. So, so like an example that I use all the time, I have common responses that I need to send out in emails, which might be a paragraph or two, and sometimes include my contact information. So I created a snippet so that all I have to do is type Jeff Ad, which is short for Jeff Address, and it puts in the paragraph and all of my contact information, and it has the added bonus of always being exactly right because I'm not having to retype the same thing over and over. And so you can do that on your iPhone or iPad with Text Expander Touch, and that database that holds all of those abbreviations that you've created will synchronize back with Text Expander on your Mac, so you can have all the same snippets on all your devices, and it's an absolutely beautiful thing. So go check out Text Expander Touch 3, and you can look at it at smilesoftware.com. And of course, I'll have a direct link right in today's show notes. And thanks, Smile, for being our sponsor.
And, outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And our second topic today, this one, Brian, I wanted you around for because you always have something to say about Apple and finances. And apparently, so does Carl Icahn.
Well, note that I do have a tiny, effectively insignificant stake in Apple. Full disclosure.
All right, and I do not. So I guess I didn't need to disclose anything there.
But there's fair enough.
All right, so Carl Icahn, he's what's the term that gets tossed around a lot? Activist investor?
That is one term. That is one term. There are a variety of terms often applied to him. Some of them are more colorful than others.
You know, activist investor is not something that you have in common with Carl Icahn, Brian, but perhaps one of the other names that he's called is.
Really?
I don't know. I thought that was
weird.
I was supposed to be sharp. So, you know, yeah. That's sharp like cheddar cheese.
Instead, it was kind of more like prickish.
Well, yes.
I see what you did
there.
Yes,
that's also sharp. That's right. Yes.
Yeah. And anyhow, okay, so Carl, he posted an open letter to Apple CEO Tim Cook today.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, and in this letter, he is urging Tim and the board to initiate a more aggressive stock buyback program than they currently have, because Apple has like $133 billion in cash, and he thinks that Apple stock value right now is about half what it's worth. And so that would make this a really good time to invest in their own stock. And yeah, and so that's what he's pushing for in this open letter.
Which is true. It's kind of a duh kind of thing. So until the moment that Apple thinks it is worth what it is actually worth, right? In other words, that the Wall Street's market capitalization does in fact equal what Apple's self-valuation is. Until that moment, Apple should theoretically spend as much of its money as it can buying back its own stock, or possibly giving it back to shareholders in the form of direct
dividends.
Dividends, thank you.
Sure.
And the flip side is this is what Carl does. Carl Icahn is a very, very successful predator. And his career has been spent doing what's best for Carl Icahn. And it would be fantastic for Carl Icahn if Apple spent more of its money in stock buybacks and increasing the dividend and whatnot. That would be a wonderful thing for Carl Icahn. And it may, in fact, be a wonderful thing for most Apple shareholders, and it might even be a wonderful thing for Apple Incorporated. But it's not like Apple doesn't know this.
Sure.
You know, like no one in the C-suite at Apple read Carl Icahn's letter and goes, huh, you know, he's right. We have $133 million. We should do something with that. You know, that didn't happen.
No, my feeling that any time anyone writes an open letter like this, it's more to gain steam for my opinion, because the people that I really want to write the letter to aren't listening to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. I mean, yeah. That's what an open letter is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, of course. And he's just, he's crazy. In a great way.
Well, he's colorful. It's funny. I was watching Mark Andreessen. Do you remember who Mark Andreessen is?
Yeah, of course. It was
a silly question, of course. But for the sake of
it was maybe, quite sharp of you. Is that the right word to use?
No, I think prickish is the word you're looking for. Mark Andreessen was the Mr. Smarty Pants who came up with the Netscape Navigator browser. And he ended up making a ton of money when AOL bought Netscape, and he has since turned that ton of money into a much larger ton of money through various VC stuff. And he was on CNBC yesterday, and he was being asked about the Apple Watch, and he did this Wonder Woman move where, you know, he's like, "Old World, New World," where he like held up his hands like he was trying to fend off bullets, and he intends to wear the Apple Watch on his left hand and his mechanical watch on his right hand. Anyway, he's super, very, very, and he's super excited about the Apple Watch, and he's also still super excited about Bitcoin and isn't concerned about the daily fluctuations, at least publicly, because he's more interested in the infrastructure and the technology and blah, blah, blah. And then they started talking about Carl Icahn, who is an activist investor on at least one company, maybe both companies that that Mr. Andreessen sits on the board, which would be eBay and HP, both of which companies just announced the split. Anyway, the point is this. He's like, well, Carl Icahn's a liar. He's just making stuff up. And so he just called one of his largest shareholders in eBay because Carl does have a significant stake there too. And he just, oh, he's a liar. It was fascinating.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, they say that there's a thin line between a brave man and a fool, and I'm not sure where he falls on that line.
He falls in the line of, I have plenty of money for my own lawyers, thank you.
You know, that's a totally valid line to be on.
If you've got the money. For good or for ill. For good or for ill, it's a totally fine, it's a legitimate line to be on.
Yep, there you go. Yeah. All right, so we have Carl telling Apple he wants them to buy back more stock again, and he's doing it in an open letter, which means that he wants to get momentum behind shareholders and have them telling Apple the same thing.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. And we're out of time.
We are.
Yeah, I know. It goes so fast because we're always having such a good time.
I was going to get all crazy and talk about how Mark really developed Mosaic, which then was renamed to Netscape as the company. But
absolutely valid. I kind of wish you had been sharp as a pinprick and had done that.
Yeah.
I very much wish you had corrected me on that.
Yeah. Well, consider this.
Brian, I think he just did.
Oh, right. Yay.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Dave, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
And Brian, thank you for joining me too.
Oh, yeah.
And Smile, thank you for being our sponsor this week.
Oh, yeah.